Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We'll get this out of the way. Yes. Our quiz of today. We've scoured through the archives, pored over the newspapers, and come up with questions about events that happened on this day over the years, today being the 22nd of September. The songs, the TV programmes, the movies, the scientific breakthroughs, the big news stories. So we want two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer those questions that we've come up with. Questions about the events that happened over the years on this day. The lovely prize today comes thanks to the 4-star Galmont Hotel and Spa in Galway. To celebrate their great autumn winter offers, available online at thegalmont.com. They've given us a luxury 2-night stay where you can enjoy accommodation in a superior room with breakfast each morning and dinner on one of the nights in Marina's restaurant. So, to get involved, you have to answer this question and ring 1850 719 500. The other way around. 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. And the question is this. The Great British Bake Off returns tonight. Which Paul is a judge on the show? So the Great British Bake Off returns tonight. Which Paul is a judge on the show? 1850 715 900. And good luck with that. And as we were doing our research for our quiz of today, we noticed that 33 years ago, in 1987, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or thereabouts, two aliens landed from Zog on RTE2 to join Ian Dempsey on The Den. Yeah, Zig and Zag started on telly 33 years ago today. So we said we put a call in. Hello, Zig. Hello, Zag.
Hi, Ray Leland.
Can you believe
it's 33 years?
Yeah. Have you any memory of that day, Zig?
No, don't.
No. Zag, have you any...
This is going well.
Yes.
Now, Ray, do you know what the thing was? Like, Ian Dempsey needed a new chair, right? But he actually got our spaceship.
Aha, that's what happened, right. I didn't know that.
The technicalities of it.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And there was no...
And he ended up sitting on our spaceship. And then we came round and said, hey, what are you doing sitting on our spaceship? And why are we in a television studio and all that sort of stuff?
And then
we decided we'd stay because our planet was running out of jokes.
That's true.
So we asked all the viewers to send us in jokes, and that's what happened.
And you know, like, you didn't plan to be there for years and years and years, did you, Zag?
No. But you see, Ray, we only have our birthday on the 29th of February, so, like, we're still only, like, 12.
Oh, right. That's handy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's only 12 years to us, so it doesn't feel like 33.
Yeah,
because when we started, Ray, I was only this tall.
Yeah.
Yes.
And now...
Yeah, we're on radio. Zag, will you tell him we're on radio?
Yeah, we're on radio, Ray.
Yes.
No, I can't quite see it.
Yes. Listen, I've been a bit mean. I've told a little white lie.
What?
No, well, you see, I said to you that the reason you were coming on is because it's 33 years since you started on that, which is true.
It's true. That's not a lie, Raymond.
Yeah, no, that is true, and it's brilliant, and it's great to celebrate that fact.
Yeah.
But there's something more to celebrate, something bigger, something more important, something of the now, something of the present.
Well, I wonder what this... What is it, Ray?
What is the race?
Cheesecake.
It's your
cheesecake.
It's one.
I'm getting a wig. No, I'm not getting a wig.
We won a holiday to the hotel.
No.
Are we getting a superior room?
You're not getting a superior room.
What's in a superior room?
A king size mattress.
No, this is the news. This is the news. The Den is coming back. Would you believe it? The Den is coming back.
I don't believe it.
Yeah, the Den's coming back, Zig.
For real?
Yes, for real.
No way.
Raymond.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Raymond, are you serious? Does anyone else know this? I mean, did you tell the people in RTE or anyone know?
No, well, this is what happened, Zag, right? There was a big emergency meeting, so I was called over, right?
Yeah.
They were worried about the future of television.
I can understand that. I've seen some of the shows recently.
And they sat me down, all these people in suits, you know?
Yeah.
Big room, and I was at the end of the table.
Was it a superior room?
It was a superior room, Zig, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And they said things like, there's a big problem. There's a big problem. We need something that's entertaining.
Yeah.
We need something that's colourful and funny. We need something for all the family. It has to be interactive, a little bit bold. And I'm going,
what's that? And and Claire Byrne isn't cutting it, Ray. Is that what they said?
No, and then they said, this is the big thing for them, there can't be an audience. We can't have an audience because of,
but Ray, we never had an audience when we were doing the Den anyway. It was the people at home.
Exactly, Zach. That's what I was thinking. So as they said these things, I was ticking them off in my head. Entertaining, yes. Colourful, yes. Funny, yes. Something for all the family, definitely.
Yeah.
Interactive, live, yes. Yeah. Doesn't need an audience, yes. And I said, it's the Den. The Den has to come back. And then this man in a suit with grey hair stood up and he said, by Jove, young man, you've got it. We must bring the Den back.
I know that guy.
He clicked his heels and they all did the conga around the office. Bring the Den back. Bring the Den back. Bring the Den back.
Bring the Den back.
Bring the Den back. Are you saying that after like 33 years after we started, we're going back on the telly?
Back on the telly, live. Live. Live, yes. And look, the brilliant thing is, it's not just Zig and Zag, it's Dustin as well. I better put a call in to Dustin and tell him.
Oh, my goodness.
Can we put a call in to Dustin, please?
Yeah. Put a call in to Dustin.
He's probably out working, doing Perspex stuff or something like that. We'll see if we can get him on. There, have we got him? We have. Hello, Dustin.
Hello, Dustin. Oh, tax man, I'm not paying anything. All them corrupt politicians going around playing golf. I am not paying a penny until this country is started out. So don't call me again.
Dustin.
Right, this is a recorded message.
It's us, Dustin.
Go back to bed, Grania. No, or Sheila, sorry. Just go back to bed.
Dustin, it's us.
Hello?
Dustin. It's not the tax man.
No, Dustin.
It's Zig and Zag and me.
Yes.
How are you, Zig? Go on, you good thing. How's the rain that?
Dustin, some good news.
For what?
Den.
Claire Byrne said yes.
No. The Den is coming back, Dustin. The Den is coming back.
Sorry?
I said the Den is coming back.
No, I heard you the first time. I'm just sorry. What? You just went to coming back to.
What? It's coming back to RTE. RTE 1.
Sorry?
I know you heard me the first time. You're just
saying. No, I got the news earlier. They said it's going to be me and Ian Dempsey and we're on TG Car. I can't wait. It's going to be fantastic. No. And it's not that.
No, Dustin, listen. It's Zig and Zag and you and I, and we're on 6:30 on a Sunday evening on RTE1. In the lead up to Christmas, from the beginning of November right up until, I think, the Sunday before Christmas. And we're there for the boys and girls and the parents and everybody who wants to watch. And we'll be inviting them to do all the things they used to do and more.
Oh, all right, myself, you, Zig and Zag, last month we did the big charity event with Bob Geldof and Niall Horan and all that.
Yes.
Right, just like that for longer.
Yes, that's it. Somebody saw it and somebody thought, oh yeah, that might be a good idea to bring that back.
Drink taken.
Sorry?
Dustin!
Behave! Yeah. So anyway...
Do you know what the best thing is?
Go on.
About us coming back. And at least now people will will be able to name their pets after us again.
It's
been years since anyone called a goldfish Zig and Zag.
Or the same
humour as used by us.
Dustin!
Yeah. Kevin has been on from Kildare. Please just lock the studio door, keep Zig and Zag in, rebuild the Den, snuggle Dustin in and bring it all back. There you go.
Well,
so Kevin is ahead of us.
That is absolutely brilliant. Ray, you're winding us up. Is this April 1st or something?
No, it's for real, Dustin.
This is for real. So
wow.
I can say it officially now. The Den will return the first Sunday in November and continue on till the last Sunday before Christmas.
We're going to be in a superior room.
Yes,
Ray,
we are.
Are we a hashtag now?
Are we? I don't know for
hashtag. Bring back the Den.
I don't know. It's great. And look, and they were so excited, the people in management.
Bring back the Den.
Yeah. When your man said it, by Jove, young man, you're right. Bring back the Den. And then there was all sorts of dancing and, they were doing... There you go.
Brilliant, Ray. We can't wait.
And look, there is one stipulation. Dustin.
I share a dressing room with Claire Burton.
No, that's not it. The stipulation is that Dustin can't be advertising various schemes and things that he'd be doing, like Christmas trees and Perspex and all that.
We might just have to wait and see what happens, Darrell.
Right. Okay. Well,
it's going to happen.
It's all very exciting. I can't wait to be on the telly with you boys again. It's great.
Ray, can I just point out something?
Yes.
You know, Ted might be listening to this.
I know.
Oh, sorry. Rayo, sorry.
Let me get some stickers printed up.
Yes, there was another stipulation.
Well, that's the more Ted Free Zone stickers.
Ted wasn't allowed. That was another stipulation. I forgot about that one.
Seems Rayo, here, is Ibiza in the green zone?
Say again?
Is Ibiza in the green zone?
I'm not too sure.
Because he got that sucky, but he's cage dancing over there in Manumission.
Is he?
Yeah. Look, that's what we're going to be doing. It's going to be, look, it's for the boys and giggles.
Yes.
But I remember Zig and Zag said it, Nat King Cole said it, from 1 to 92.
That's it.
And we're going to have the crack, we're going to have brilliant fun, and we're going to get beat this COVID thing, and we're going to have brilliant fun, gang.
Brilliant. Okay.
And the big thing we're going to do, Ray, is we're going to include the viewers. That's it, isn't it?
That's it. Interactive. Listen, see you soon. Zig and Zag, Dustin. The Dennis
Francisco Vasquez Garcia, and welcome to Almeria. And we have Cincas and Canleche, we have Fiesta and Fania. We have the song of the Chinchona, we have Brandy and half Corona, and Leonardo and his accordion, and Calamari and Macaroni. Come all you rambling boys of pleasure, and ladies of ease. We must say adios until we say Maria once again. And this one's here. Will you kindly kill a doll for me? There is one kiss on her in the bingo. Oh, he told us why she's crazy crinkle. As he pulls up the doll's head laughing, and Miraldo throws his body in the sea. Oh, you rambling boys of pleasure, the ladies of easy leisure, we must say adios until we see a Maria once again.
Fiesta, the Pogues on RT Radio 1. It's great to share a bit of good news. Can't wait till somebody. Alan Rosslair says, bloody hell, I'm delighted with the Den. Best news. Watched it for years with my children and still miss it. Still listen to the cassette from time to time. Do you know, Alan Rosslair, that that cassette is 30 years old this December? OMG, you've lifted the cloud over my day. So, so happy. That's Karen McSweeney in Dublin. And I'm crying in my kitchen over the Den coming back. Tears of joy, I hope. Just came home from my 5-year-old having a COVID test. Oh, I hope everything's okay. You've made my day, says Lauren Cork. Please do Christmas morning on the Den live. We might, Peter. We might. Will there be Den pens? I'm sure there will be. And somebody else says, love the mayhem of Zig Zag and the Great Dustin, slapstick at its best, like the Marx Brothers. Wow. Brilliant news. My kids, both in their 30s, are delighted too. 1 to 92. I'm 21 weeks pregnant and I'm blaming the hormones, but I just welled up there. Can't wait for the den to be back. Something to look forward to in this, yeah, SH1T show of a year. The last 10 minutes of the show made me cry laughing. I had to pull in. I was laughing so hard. Can't wait for the den to return. That's Ronnie. Yeah, it's the 8th of November, which is the second Sunday. And then we run up to Christmas. And it's just because we're in, you know, particularly odd times. People need a bit of a lift, a bit of diversion, a bit of mayhem, a bit of madness, a bit of boldness, all of those things. So that's what we hope to deliver on a Sunday at 6:30 on RT1. The news we all needed. I'm a bit emotional, says Michelle Hennessy. I'm a bit emotional too. Listen, we need two people to come on and play our quiz of today after 4 o'clock. And the question, once again, the Great British Bake Off returns tonight. There you go. Yeah. What we want to know is, which Paul is a judge on the show? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And the prize today, two nights for yourself and somebody of your choice in the 4-star Galmont Hotel and Spa in Galway. So 1850 715 900 and good luck with that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
So loads of great comments about the den. So more news about that over the coming weeks. The 8th of November is the start date, and that's a Sunday, and 6:30 on RTE 1. Now, I'm joined in studio by Katie Hogan and Luke Gibney. And they've spent the last 3 years travelling around the world and III. And they've had more than their fair share of dramas and adventures, and they're here to tell us more. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon to you. Thanks a million for having us.
You look great.
Thank you very much.
No, but you do. You look all fresh and tanned and healthy.
See how long that lasts now. We're home.
Get all dressed up for the radio.
Yeah. How long are you back?
We flew back in on the 27th of August, so about 3.5 weeks now.
Right.
4 weeks.
And what date did you leave? Can you remember?
We left 4th of February 2017.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's go back to begin then. How did G2 meet?
Oh, it was a sunny day in Grafton Street.
See those headphones, Luke? Will you put them on the ground because we're getting a bit of feedback? That's probably it, isn't it? Yeah. And just come in closer to the microphone. Yeah. Mark's telling me there. Great. Now, okay. So you met on Grafton Street.
Yeah. Metro Cafe.
Yeah.
Mutual friend.
Yeah.
Tried to set him up with another friend.
We try not to give him too much credit.
No.
He's one of those types, you know.
No.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, from there on in, it was a long dating period,
courtship,
shall we say, politely.
Courtship, yeah.
Courtship.
Nice old fashioned courtship.
Yeah, right, sure. Okay.
Let's go with that.
And both of you had sort of office type jobs, did you?
Yeah.
What did you do, Luke?
I worked in AIB Card Services.
Right.
You know, so I dealt with lost and stolen cards and credit card fraud and stuff like that.
Okay.
And I worked in marketing.
Marketing.
Yeah.
Okay. And both good jobs, well paid.
Yeah.
Very well. Like, you know, happy out. We had everything we needed at the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Apartment in North Dublin and full-time jobs and had a lot more than...
Most people,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
very lucky.
Yeah, very right. lucky.
So then you went off on a long holiday, a 6-week holiday.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Go
Worked
on.
Plenty of overtime for that holiday. No, we went away to Thailand and Vietnam for about six weeks. It was my first time kind of heading to another continent. Luke had been away before. I think he travelled Australia and the States. And I got the itch. I got the bug.
Right.
So we came back and I was just obsessed with the idea of travelling. It was always something on our to-do list, but wasn't high priority. You know, we thought, oh, we'll probably maybe save for a mortgage or talk marriage or, you know, completely sucked into the rat race. And then all of a sudden I was like travelling.
We got home and our housemates had thrown about 3 or 4 parties, left the heating on for about 4 weeks. And we were just like, okay, let's just get out of here.
Yeah.
But that's sort of fanciful, and people listening, we've all been there, you know, a long lovely holiday,
yeah,
and I'm going to change my world now, I'm going to change my life,
yeah,
whether it's you know, moving down to West Kerry or travelling the world. And then within 2 weeks, you're back to normal and reality kicks in. And,
yeah.
You know, that fades away. But with you, it didn't fade away.
No, I did think it was holiday blues for a little while, but I just, like I said, I got the bug. So then we started looking into ways of like, how can we do this? You know, I mean, are we mad, first of all? And then obviously teaching English as a second language is always top priority for anyone going abroad. So we did look into it and we did enroll in a course, like a part-time course on Grafton Street. And we did a 10-week course there and we got our CELT qualification. So then we were like, I mean, at the same time, we were saving as much as possible.
Like crazy.
Like crazy. Yeah. Like crazy.
I mean, I think originally the plan was to head off and work in some of the countries that pay English teachers really well. So we were going to kill the travel bug and try and save enough money to come back and maybe put a deposit on a house for just the two of us.
Remember that goal? Yeah. Remember that? Yeah.
That did not happen.
That did not happen. What a tangent we went on.
Right, okay. So that was the original plan.
That was the original plan.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was no plan to travel for 3 years?
Oh, absolutely not.
No.
Everyone was like, see you in a year. Well, first of all, our family were like, you're not. I think even like my mom driving us to Dublin Airport was like, you're really going. Like, you're really going.
Yeah.
I think we were like, see in about a year and a half. And yeah, we
were. Where did you start your journey?
We started our journey in Mexico. We flew through New York, flew into Mexico, and then we just worked our way all the way down, right down through Central South America to Brazil. And
you were learning as you go, because even things like, you know, luggage.
Mm.
Were you sort of jettisoning things as you went?
Oh my God, yeah. Every city, every time we got into a new place, it was like, I don't need that jacket anymore. Yeah. I don't need those trousers anymore. Yeah. These boots weigh a ton.
Completely, yeah. And you get rid of all your white clothes first. That goes.
White is not a good idea for long-term travel. And you just, I suppose, it's like anything. You work a system into your life. You find that what best suits you.
Yeah.
So you would have, and we have our backpacks, and literally I can open my backpack and be like, socks, boxers, trousers. And I know where everything is.
Yes, yeah.
You know?
It's like a pit stop in Formula One.
You get to a point where you can pack your bag and be on a bus within about 6.5 minutes of getting up out of bed in the morning, just because you know where everything is. You know?
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So it was Mexico and down through South America, which is a well-travelled path for a lot of Irish people who go travelling. So what countries did you hit along the way then?
So we did all of Central America. We did the usual, like Guatemala, Nicaragua, right up to El Salvador, right up to kind of Costa Rica. And then we flew over to Colombia. And then from Colombia, we did all the countries then.
Right.
But it wasn't until we landed in Colombia that we sort of, I think for the first few weeks, maybe months, we were like, okay, we were spending and we were going on all the tours and we were eating out all the time and we were taking a taxi or staying in an Airbnb.
Yeah. You're on holidays.
Totally holiday mode. Yeah. And then in Colombia, it really hit us like, okay, we're seeing the red line, and you know we're going too fast, and so we started looking at alternatives, and I think that was when we started turning into like extreme budget backpackers.
Right.
And we weren't on holiday anymore, and we knew that if we actually wanted to make it to Brazil and get home, we had to start looking at alternatives. So that's when volunteering played a huge part, and it was where we've gained most of our stories and our experiences from, particularly in Latin America.
Yeah. So where was the first place you volunteered?
Oh, would you believe? It was on a chocolate farm in Colombia, and it's absolute heaven.
That's a makey-up thing.
I swear to God.
It's absolutely not. We worked in... There's a chocolate farm in Colombia.
Right.
There's a lady in Colombia who runs an organic bean to bar single origin chocolate, and we basically like picked, roasted, did the beans, got the chocolate,
packaged it all.
Yeah.
Oh, it was absolutely incredible. And then we got free board and free food in exchange for about 25 hours a week.
Yeah.
So I mean, heaven.
Yeah. And then as much chocolate as you could eat.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was saying. That when we realised that our clothes were getting tighter and we had severe back acne, that's when we were like, we should probably move on.
Was it high end? Were you talking 90%?
The whole thing.
Yeah,
we had like peanut filled bars. Right. We had dark chocolate, milk chocolate, vegan chocolate.
But
oh my God.
Like 80-90% cacao. And then she used to do ceremonial cacao as well, which is like 100% cacao that they make into drinks and stuff. And it's just,
we learned
the lobas, basically.
Yeah,
totally. What happened. And it was incredible. It was so good.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was the first one.
A chocolate farm.
A chocolate farm.
Jamie, It's straight out of Alice in Wonderland or Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, isn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think then we were like, okay, there's something in this, you know what I mean? Not only have we gained a skill, we had an amazing time, but we also saved money. So then that kind of became just a huge option for us as we continued travelling on. So we did everything, like we worked in an orphanage in Bolivia, an English school in Chile, and then we went and we taught English and we lived with the Shipibo tribe. I always feel
now,
so pretentious.
The Shipibo,
the Shipibo tribe is like an indigenous tribe that live in the Amazon in northern Peru. And we went in there and we lived in a tree house. And I swear to God. And we taught English for 2 hours a day to their three kids. It was funny, we were supposed to only take three kids, and then as the village heard, every day we'd arrive to our little hut in the classroom and there was just more and more kids, like
and a treehouse. You lived in a treehouse?
We lived up in a treehouse, it was like completely open.
How far?
An actual tree.
Maybe
8-9 feet off the ground, like a wooden ladder.
Yeah.
And it was literally like planks of wood with a bed and then a net around it.
It was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Now, both of you would have to be into this, because if one person is in any way uncomfortable with bugs and that sort of thing, it's not going to work, is it?
It's funny you should say that, because I am a massive... I'm arachnophobic. I'm terrified of spiders, right? But one night we were lying in bed and we had... So living in our treehouse, we had a possum that we call Polly, and then there was a massive tarantula, but it was always on the outside of the net. And one night we went to go to bed and it was inside the net on our mosquito net thing. So, of course, I had to step up and be the man. The only thing we had was this tiny little lunchbox.
Right.
So I had to catch a tarantula, a massive jungle tarantula, in a lunchbox. You have never heard a man scream. So
it was
loud.
Good we were in the Amazon and all good here.
I just threw the lunchbox and everything.
But you know they treat arachnophobia with this thing called desensitization. Now, usually they start you with a small little spider and then introduce bigger ones as you go along. You went straight for
cold
the industrial strength desensitization.
Yeah, like ripping off a band-aid.
Yeah,
just
that's
done.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I've never been afraid of a spider since, so
it
works.
Yeah,
you know, it
works. No, but you're right.
I'm jealous in one way, but I know that I would never do this myself because I'm just not that type of person. But but like your experiences are amazing. Mm. So all the time looking for opportunities to volunteer and so that you don't have to pay for your food or your lodgings.
Pretty much. If we weren't spending, it wasn't even just about saving because we weren't making any money. There was no income at the time, but it was more just prevent spending.
Okay.
And this is how we did it.
Okay. So at what stage then did the dream of making enough money for a down payment on a house, when did you scrap that?
I'm going to say probably about 8 months in. Because originally we had kind of planned maybe Nicaragua was supposed to be a good place. And then I would say we kind of got to a stage where it wasn't as easy to find work in the teaching as we thought it would be. Because funnily enough, we landed right in the middle of Semana Santa, which is like Easter week, and there's no school, there's no term, there's no work, there's no nothing. So of course it was quite difficult for us. And then when the volunteering happened, we just kind of, it went onto the back burner and we kind of focused more on the actual travel aspect of what we were doing. So rather than being on holiday anymore, we actually fell into more or less what we do now, which was focusing on the travel side of it, you know, getting immersed in the culture and meeting the people. And that kind of came from the volunteering as well. You know, that's a really good side of the volunteering, is that if you're volunteering with local people, you get invited to local events and you eat with local people and you hang out with local people. And we just fell in love with it.
Mm. So it's total immersion, really.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you carry that through to how you traveled as well, because you took very few flights. And if there was a flight and a bus, you went with the bus.
Mm. Always.
Yeah, but you're talking long journeys then, aren't you?
Really long journeys. We would only fly if we have to be honest with you. And I mean, I think in the 3 years, we've only taken about 14, 15 flights.
About 14, I think.
In total. So like that, I mean, you would look at, say, you know, €25, €30 flight, and it's only going to be an hour and a half. Oh, but there's a 48-hour bus journey for, you know, €6. So, but that is where, before you know, by the end of that bus journey, you've about 20 new mates. You've been invited to everyone's house. You've a place to stay.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, so, and then it just rickrolls. And then you find out new places to go that isn't on the tourist trail or might be still a hidden gem or so. I mean, it just you just roll with it.
So you did the Americas, Central America and South America. And then at this stage, you've decided that this is something we want to do and we want to go further afield.
Yeah.
So you came back to Dublin and then headed over the other side of the world.
Yeah.
To where?
Over to Southeast Asia. So we decided at the end, after when we got to Brazil, we went back to our little chocolate farm and sort of was like, okay, let's figure out what's our next move. And we both agreed we didn't want to go home. We weren't ready to go home. But obviously traveling, we decided to look at Southeast Asia. Now, again, we've met a lot of people on our travels through Latin America who had just come from there or whatever. And it's so much cheaper even on that side of the world. And we had been in Thailand and Vietnam before. Yeah. So we decided to head back over. Now, obviously, you have to kind of stop off somewhere in Europe. So we're like, oh, we won't tell anyone and we'll just do a quick trip home. Now, we're not. It was so funny because I was like, if we're going home, we're having a flight booked. You know what I mean? Like, I was like so afraid. Like, we're not getting sucked back in. So we'd come home and we'd surprise everyone. No one was expecting us. And we didn't even unpack our bag. We literally did a quick wash. Mom, here you go. You know? And then our bags were packed straight away and we were gone for 1 week, 1 week later. So we flew into Thailand. Now, when we got into Thailand, we actually had a volunteer position with an animal shelter lined up for 2 months.
Okay.
So
what sort of animals?
Everything. Like, it was just sort of like a sanctuary. Right. You know, now it kind of had resident cats and dogs, but it was a vet clinic as well.
Right.
It's not your, you know, hi, like my dog has kennel cough. It's like, you know, my dog has TBT and my dog has rabies and, you know, all this like...
This goat only has three legs.
That kind of stuff. So we stayed there for 2 months. And then it was actually there that... At the time, we had already had our website and we were just using it as a little travel guide. It started off as just us kind of writing a little diary kind of extracts, I suppose. And then it went into becoming a how-to guide because when we would do our research into traveling, we noticed that so many people talk about all these amazing things to go see and do, but they never tell you how to get there, when the bus leaves, how much is it, you know, the really the
concrete information. So this is where the ungraceful guide came from.
Pretty much.
Because a lot of the stuff about traveling isn't that graceful. Was that the idea or was it something else?
With us, not graceful. Graceful whatsoever. Yeah, right. There's nothing graceful about our travels whatsoever. I suppose from there, we have broken our website so many times. We have updated it. We've just worked so hard on it. And we kind of learned how to build websites.
Right.
So it was while we were volunteering in Thailand that we got our first sort of like paid job.
Oh, so you know, and you can do that remotely. We all know that now.
Yeah.
You weren't working from home.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, you were, but your home was sort of
like, you know, in the middle of nowhere in Thailand. It takes you about 2 hours to open up a new tab. You know what I mean? Like by the time the Wi-Fi kicks in and everything.
So now you're doing two things. Then you're volunteering where you can get it, and you're offering this service to people anywhere in the world to design and maintain websites.
Pretty much.
And then you're getting this like unique and very special view of the world.
Exactly. So
where you end up in India.
Yes.
And India, so you were right up in the northeast part of India.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, tell us a little bit about that.
So after Thailand, we obviously did the usual route through Southeast Asia. And then we went over to India and our plan was just to spend 2 months there. So we only got a 2 month visa, but of course, God loved them. And the immigration office, we were like, one more visa. So we went earlier this year in February, 2020, we landed back in India. This was our third time there. And obviously at this point, COVID was topic of conversation, but it wasn't.
It hadn't hit fully
in India. We had come from Sri Lanka and there was like one confirmed case in Sri Lanka and that's how we heard of it. So then we went into the northeast region of India, which is along kind of like the border of Myanmar.
And of course, you're not consuming news the way you would be if you're at home.
No.
So you don't have a news feed. You're not. You're not on the journal.ie.
Yeah, no, definitely not. You'd be lucky if you have a bar on your phone to get some signal. Like.
Yeah.
But the area we were in, it was it's a tribal area. So I'm talking, like you said, there's no network on your phones, there's no Wi-Fi, nothing
it's
like that.
You're rural.
It's completely mountainous. We entered a little bubble there. And it wasn't until we hit a city in a province called Manipur that was the first time COVID became very real for us. Because we were being turned away from hotels, we couldn't get accommodation, we weren't able on transport.
People were pulling their children away from us.
Why?
Well, see, I think what happened was when it came in, a lot of people in India they're big into the social medias. So that's where they get a lot of their news from. And when it was introduced to India, the COVID virus was introduced, it was through, I think, a tour group came from Italy. Like 16 people, something like that. And they landed and they toured all over the country. And then as they were leaving, they were being tested and 15 of them tested positive. Right. So they brought it in and they were Italian. So what happened was in India and through the social medias and stuff, it became known as the Western virus.
At the same time,
isn't
people...
Isn't that mad?
Yeah. So it was us that brought it in. Yeah.
Because like here it was Wuhan, China, and then it got to Italy eventually. And then Italy back to India.
Yeah,
well,
and
I mean,
that was the main kind of
I suppose that the topic was that tour group. But as well, like you have people coming from like the Middle East and from the UK and from the States, like landing in and out of India on business or whatever. So it just that's where.
So
it
you were treated as pariahs.
Big time. Oh yeah.
But I mean, and it wasn't like when we arrived into this city and we stayed in this, oh my God, it was such a shock. It was really, it was an awful place.
Yeah.
And the first thing he said to us was, are you Italian? And we were like, no, we're Irish. And we showed our passport and then we logged on. And this is when we started looking up the news and going, oh, okay, this is what's happening. And then strangely enough, there was a breaking news where two Irish people, two Irish people were held up in a hospital and quarantined while they were getting tested. And they ran from an Indian hospital, a couple. So we were like, I swear to God, like if you Google it. So all of a sudden we were like, no, we're not Irish. We're from Iceland. It was like, no.
We can't even say Irish anymore.
It was the first time we were mortified to have an Irish passport.
We went to get a bus one day and the bus driver was like, okay, look, we'll take you, but you have to sit on the roof on the luggage rack. So we were all right.
Now for us, we were like, cool, sitting on top, going, this is deadly, but not realizing that people were like, God, get them away from us.
And then I think what happened was as we started to realise that it was getting more and more serious. I think what happened was we had come back. So as Katie said, we were up in the northeast, and I mean we were visiting a tribe, like the last of the tattooed headhunters. So we were with these guys who like have tattooed faces and there's zero news, internet, anything. We arrived back.
How do you find out about these people?
Katie.
I don't know, just talking to people
And when you rock up, because they're obviously not a tourist attraction, you know what I mean? They're living their lives there. So when you rock up, how does that go? What's the conversation or what's the first encounter?
Well, the first thing you have to do is find someone who can speak English and be kind of your translator, you know. But I mean, we found a local guy and we asked him to hike with us into this village, and we went into the chief headhunter's house, and it was like we were sitting there with about 7 of these headhunters, and exactly what you think it is.
They
used to kill. It was like a win was to you. The reason why you get these tattoos done is if you brought the head of an enemy tribe back to your tribe.
This is only
up to the maybe 70s, 80s.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
When Christianity was introduced, that's why they got rid of it. That's why they stopped doing it.
So you didn't fear for your life or your head or anything? No.
Definitely not. No. But it was a bit surreal when they were showing us like the machetes and all, and he was telling us like women and children weren't even spared. So it was a bit eerie, but also jaw was on the floor, you know, talking to these guys. Like, now they're all in like their 90s, and
tattooed faces,
everything, even all their wives and everything,
machetes and spears, and still the full garb, the headdresses. And
it was incredible, it was absolutely incredible.
Northeast India,
Northeast India,
up in Nagaland,
Konyak tribe,
So, we had like stepped out of that into this. Wow, we turn our
there's
back for
TV,
2 minutes and the world's
on fire. There's definitely a book.
Well, the 40 you wanted it.
There's a book for sure. There's a book for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But you arrived back to Manipur, is it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Right. And then this was all happening. Yeah. We were kind of feeling, like you said, pariahs. And then all of a sudden, so it kind of works like counties here, but in India it's provinces, and each province were shutting their doors. And particularly being foreign meant we couldn't cross in. So we just sort of was like, it was just getting a bit too real for us. Yeah. Indian had announced that they were cancelling all visas, so no one could get into the country anymore. So we decided we'll make a dart for somewhere with a bit more of a modern infrastructure and just
less people.
Less people.
Where'd you go?
We ran to Thailand. Right. We ran back to Thailand. Yeah. And it was funny because, again, the area we were in, we had to get a bus, three days back-to-back transport to get to the airport. And on our last night on the way to the airport, we got into a horrific bus crash. It was probably the first bad, like, woeful incident. Like, I'm talking, our bus driver lost his foot. It was manic. We had to climb out the window of the bus. We were head-on collision with a truck. So at this stage, we were like, oh God, we have to get out of here, you know? And then we arrive into the airport, and that's when all the... It was like, it's like a TV show, but it was literally where all the screens were going cancelled. Yes. We were like, please, you know? So I think we got one of the last flights out of there. And then India completely shut up that week then. And we arrived then in Thailand, and we were very lucky because, again, I'd say a week later, they started cancelling flights in and out, closing the borders. We went to an island called Koh Lanta down the south of Thailand, and that whole island was blocked off. The ferries were cancelled, so there was no on or off, and we were just like, okay, this is where we're going to probably be for a little while.
And you bring your ukulele everywhere, do you? Or do you purchase a new one in each place?
No, I bring my ukulele everywhere with me. Unfortunately, she took a pasting in the bus crash.
Oh, did she? Poor ukulele, right.
Smashed. But I found a piece of driftwood in Thailand and fixed her up. So
she's struggling, but she's there.
Okay, and, you know, in the middle of all this pandemics and bus crashes and headhunters and all that, some brilliant news.
Yeah. So we arrived to Thailand and Koh Lanta. We're like, okay, like Paradise Island, happy out. Ah, we'll just rest up now for a while. Oh, would you look at that? I'm pregnant.
That's what I said. That's exactly what I said.
You just did that. You put your hands down.
She told me, and I went, but.
You were involved, Luke. You were involved.
No Virgin Mary over here.
I take it that it wasn't in the planning, was it? It wasn't planned.
It was a lovely surprise. A lovely surprise made in India.
Yes, okay. And you've picked a name, have you already?
Well, it's starting to stick. No, we always have this vision of, because of our lifestyle, that we'll have this like feral animal talking, tree climbing, no shoe wearing child, so we've nicknamed it Mowgli.
From the jungle.
But we've no idea what the gender is or anything.
But unfortunately now, Instagram, social media, everything, it's caught on. So when everyone refers, even we went out the other night, my mum got married and I was out with my family and everything, and they all kept coming up and going, so when Mowgli gets here, we'll do this. I'm like, oh my God, our child is called Mowgli. And it hasn't even been born yet.
Now congratulations.
Thank you.
When is Mowgli due?
November.
November, yeah. Brilliant. Right. And you've no intention or no plans to stop what you're doing?
No.
Right. I mean, we can't plan anything yet.
No.
There's so many factors we need to take into consideration. But let's just say, it's to be continued.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because a whole new set of logistical problems we have. Yeah.
It's just something else to carry, really.
So you let the jettison the ukulele and it'll be a baby.
Oh God, we'll talk about that. That's a difficult decision to make.
So The Ungraceful Guide, if people put that in, they'll find you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're available to, you're still designing websites and all that sort of thing.
We are indeed. Yeah. We are indeed.
We'll be going on maternity leave shortly.
Right. And this, you're gonna stay here, have the babby.
Yes, obviously. Have the babby, enjoy Christmas.
Take advantage
our first Irish Christmas
friends.
In a couple of years and then see what happens maybe early mid next year.
And of course, everything's uncertain now, isn't it?
Very
much, not a time to be planning a world trip again.
No. So we'll just see what happens.
That's why we're saying to be continued.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if I was planning it, I'd return to the chocolate farm.
That's exactly our dream.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So please.
Well, what a place to bring up a child.
I know.
That's
right?
it, and it's a beautiful farm with loads of animals and a river, and it's up in the mountains. So, and the lady who runs it, and when we told her, she was like, "Please come back here and bring the babby." And so please God, come maybe March, April, we'll be in the hills of Colombia outside Medellin on a chocolate farm.
Yeah.
Right. Look, I'm, as I said, so envious of you. Like, just you're glowing. You're just glowing. Not in a pregnant way, just glowing. And two people who have a wonderful life and very happy together, and great that you came into the studio.
Thanks so much.
And shared your energy and your story.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks, Luke. Thank you very much. Take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
What a lovely couple. What a really lovely couple. Yeah, now this. They're all excited and delighted in the office because the Great British Bake Off returns to our screens tonight. New presenter Matt Lucas. I'm interested in seeing him on it. We're expecting all the usual delicious drama and wonderfully creative cakes from the bakers. And one thing that I've always been fascinated by is how they are illustrated. You know, when they're set a challenge and then the person says, I'm going to build a pyramid and there's going to be ladders coming down of it and then there's going to be all sorts of Egyptians walking up the side. And then you get this lovely, beautiful illustration of what that person has just said. Well, we have the man on the line who does those gorgeous, beautiful illustrations. Tom Hobie. Good afternoon.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you're the man. How long have you been doing it for?
11 years this year. Started in 2010.
Right. And did you study fine art or graphic design, or what's your background?
Illustration I studied, yeah.
Right.
Did a degree in Bournemouth.
And how did you get the job? How did you get the Great British Bake Off job?
Well, it was kind of a case of right place, right time. I moved to London with no kind of job prospects, just winging it to try and seek some fame in illustration. And a friend worked for a TV company that said they were looking for some help in the edit. And so I managed to wing my way in with no real experience. And I happened to be in the room, the edit suite of the first episode of the first series of Bake Off,
right.
with the director and the editor. And as they were kind of going through the process of cutting the first episode together, they realized that there was a kind of visual element missing from the show. And they needed a way for the viewers to kind of understand what was being created while all they could see was kind of eggs and flour being thrown everywhere. And the bakers kind of sat watching the oven. So they asked me if I could kind of come up with some ideas because, you know, in the midst of the series that I'd been in, I'd kind of told them that I was an illustrator and had no real interest in a TV career. So,
right.
I did a few sketches and got the gig.
And the rest is history. Good luck. Thanks so much for talking to us. No, I'm joking. So how does the process work then?
During baking, once they've finished creating the cakes, there's about 45 minutes between them finishing the bakes. They tidy the tent up and then they do the judging. So producers go in, take lots of photos of the bakes, and then once they've cut them open so I can see what's inside, and then a couple of days later they put all those photos together, send them to me, and I start working from kind of the week after the first episode starts filming, usually in the spring, but a bit later this year.
Yes.
I get going, so I'm usually working from about, May up until, usually a month or two after the show's started airing, really. So
it's half the year nearly, is it? Well, it's not half the year, but it's a good, is it? How many months do you put in?
Yeah, so as well as the British show, I do Junior Bake Off.
Right.
Usually do American, didn't really have time this year with everything going on. And then we do the Christmas specials, and then we do the Stand Up for Cancer celebrity version.
Yes.
So it's usually about 9 months of the year, to be quite honest. It's usually three quarters of the year is drawing cakes.
And Tom, how many illustrations would you do then in your average year?
I think it's like about 150-ish. That's off the top of my head, but in 10 years, we've done 3,000 plus, I think.
And people would be interested to know, what do you use? Is it pencils, crayons? What do you use?
I used to do the kind of the black line work in pen and then scan it in and then colour it digitally. But over time, production got kind of more increased and, all that sort of thing. It's all kind of gone digital now.
Oh, it's all digital, right. Okay.
Yeah, so I draw it all with a graphics tablet.
Right. Amazing. Mm. And it wasn't it such luck that you were there and that you were so good? that, you know, because, you know, you could have done a couple of sketches for them and they could have said, no, thanks. Thanks, Tom.
Sure.
We will look for somebody else. Yeah. And what about the finished product? Is there, so because it's done digitally, is there actually a hard copy of the sketches?
Yeah, well, yeah, kind of. So I have, you know,
You're breaking up.
Have you got me?
Yeah, have you there. If you stay wherever you are now, it's great. Yeah, good.
Yeah. So, yeah, anyway, so the line drawings we got lots of, and, yeah, it's just kind of printed. Anyone's interested in picking one up from my website, you can always get one for your home.
Right. TomHovey.co.uk. TomHovey.co.uk. And I would imagine the contestants would be, you know, after you to get illustrations of their particular cakes.
Yeah, for sure. I always have a kind of chat with most of the bakers once the series finished, and they get one at least, and then some of the bakers, you know, that kind of go all the way generally want to get, you know, all of their prints. So lots of them have got the full range of, you know, 20 illustrations on their kitchen wall, which is really nice. Yeah, it's really great.
Nice thing to do. Have any of the contestants, you know, had issue with your designs?
No, not really, because, you know, generally my job is to make them look better than actually what happens in the test. They're usually thanking me for, you know, polishing them up.
Yeah, so your job is not just illustration, but flattery as well, it's a nice way to live your life, Tom, isn't it? A lovely way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Are you happy with your job, Tom Hovey?
Yes, of course. Yes. Yeah, I draw for a living.
Yeah, lovely, lovely.
Yes.
Yeah, what do they say? Find something you enjoy doing and then find somebody who'll pay you to do it. And you never work a day in your life. That's you.
Exactly.
Great talking to you, Tom.
Thanks so much for having me.
Mind yourself. Bye. That's Tom Hovey there and his website, tomhovey.co.uk. And he's the man who illustrates the cakes on the Great British Bake Off, which returns to Channel 4 tonight.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Girl Margaret Marion, thank you very, very much. It's the quiz of today. Yes, we've gone back to the archives, the newspapers, to find out what were the big stories on the 22nd of September over the years. And we've put together 10 questions. And we've a lovely prize to give away as well. It's a two-night stay for two people in the four-star Galmont Hotel and Spa in Galway. TheGalmont.com is their website, and they have autumn and winter offers available online at that website address. They've given us a luxury two-night stay where you can enjoy accommodation in a superior room with breakfast each morning and dinner on one of the nights in Marina's restaurant. Battling it out for that, we have Gail Hambidge in Wicklow. How are you doing, Gail?
Hi, Ray. Thanks for letting me on.
Thanks for letting me on. I've never met a Hambidge before.
Well, it's always a first.
Yes. Hanbidge. Is that it?
Yeah, no R and no, only one D.
Yeah, Hanbidge. Right. Yeah. Are there a lot of you around?
Maybe 150, 160 in this country.
Right, okay. And you're on the Carlow-Wicklow border?
Yeah, just a place called Kilkenno, between Shillela in Wicklow and Tullow in Carlow.
Right. Is that mountainous enough? No?
Yeah, I'm at the bottom of a hill, pretty mountainous.
Right, at the bottom.
Very picturesque.
Right. What's your story? Oh, you better get the qualifying question out of the way. The Great British Bake Off returns tonight. Which Paul is a judge on the show?
Paul Hollywood.
Is the correct answer?
Yes.
Now, is he a man that you would think about a lot or not?
Oh, God, no.
No.
Only think about my lovely husband.
Right. He does have a twinkle in his eye, though, doesn't he, Paul Hollywood?
Oh, no.
No, not at all. Right. You're more excited about the Den returning.
Yeah. No, I was just telling your researcher there, back in the day, there was an official fan club and myself and my sister Moira were members.
Yes.
Yeah. And we have the badges. They were huge, enormous badges. Right. And I still, in my childhood bedroom, have the Zig and Zag bin that I bought
brilliant.
From her.
Now, you've three children, Gail.
Yeah.
What age are they?
Samuel is 13. I got his father, or not his father, his granddad, Sam, to collect him from the bus in anticipation I might be on. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to be on.
Okay.
And I have two littler ones here. Abigail is 9 and Nigella is 8, running around looking at me.
Here's the question, Gail. Do you think they'll enjoy the Den?
Oh, yeah. No, they wrote, when they heard it on the radio, they insisted on staying in the car to hear the rest of it while I ran in to get a snack for them.
Right.
And they put a big post-it up with the details on it.
Oh, brilliant.
So they
brilliant.
Won't
oh, great, great, great. Okay.
So we're very enthusiastic.
That's good to hear. Okay, you're up against Emer Gormley in Letterkenny in County Donegal. How are you doing, Emer?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
I was going to say, how are you doing? How are you doing, Emer? That's a really bad accent.
It's good enough.
It's good enough, right. What's your story?
Well, I just finished school there. I'm a primary school teacher here in Letterkenny.
Yeah. What class do you teach?
I have fourth class in Woodland School in Letterkenny, so a big hello to the boys and girls in fourth class.
And how's it going? Because it's very odd.
Oh, yeah. Do you know what? It was the children were great. They just got... They adapted very quickly. They got the hand washing regimes, staying in the pods. I suppose as adults, we tend to overthink things, whereas the kids just kind of said, right, teacher, let's get on with it. Stop saying things 55 times.
They're a lot more adaptable than we give them credit for.
Oh, definitely. Oh, they're brilliant. They really are.
Yeah, yeah.
They really, really are.
And have you got children of your own, is that?
I don't. I just have Daisy the dog here beside me.
What breed is Daisy?
Daisy is a miniature Yorkshire Terrier.
Ah, nice. Nice.
Yes. And so Daisy keeps me busy.
And you bring Daisy for a walk now this evening?
Daisy was out at 6:30 this morning.
Look at
so
you.
So that's done.
6:30?
6:30 this morning.
Right.
It's for her dog.
It's a nice time to be up and out, though. It's a nice.
It was lovely. It was lovely.
You have a head start on the world.
Yes, yeah. Fresh air, ready for the day. Yeah. So it's great.
Okay, now great prize today: 2-night stay in the Galmont Hotel and Spa in Galway. So both of you are far enough away to appreciate that.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, we have 5 questions each on this date, 22nd of September, from over the years. Good luck to Gail and Wicklow. Good luck to Emer and Letterkenny. Let's get going. Okay, Gail, your first question is this. On this day in 1955, the UK's first commercial television station was launched. What was the name of the station? ITV, Channel 4 or Channel 5?
ITV, Channel 4. It was ITV.
Is the correct answer. Emer, your first question. Also on this day in 1955, the first advert on UK TV is broadcast. What was the advert for? Trainers, toothpaste or tomatoes?
Oh, God. Do we see? What about toothpaste?
Is the correct answer. Gibbs SR toothpaste. Second question for you, Gail. It's an audio one, so have a listen to this. So no one told you life was going to be this way. Your job's a joke, you broke. Your love life's the only way. Yes, theme tune to Friends, first broadcast on American television on this day in 1994 on NBC. Who played the part of Monica?
Monica. Courtney Cox.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Okay, audio one for you as well. Emer, have a listen to this. Theme tune from a TV programme, first broadcast on this day in 1989, starring David Hasselhoff. What's the name of the programme?
Baywatch.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Okay, you're good. Question number 3, Gail. On this day in 2015, which Pope was greeted by President Barack Obama as he arrived for a 6-day tour of the US?
This day in 2015, so that's 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Pope Francis.
Is the correct answer. Yes, you're doing it all in your head there. And for you, Emer, on this day in 1985, the French president, Laurent Fabio, appears on TV to confess that French Secret Service agents had sunk which Greenpeace boat?
Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. A Greenpeace boat.
Peace?
Greenpeace. They're a sort of an environmental organisation before it was fashionable.
Okay, we did before my time.
Yes.
Do you mind
what age are you, Emer? Do you mind me asking?
I'm 29.
Oh yeah, Jean, yeah, way before your time. It'll be a stab in the dark for you then.
Yeah, we'll go with what do we say? Is it a French name?
No, it's not. No.
Okay, thinking of go with what do you say? Rainbow Warrior.
Come on now, come on. Are you online there, Mrs.
No, I have a phone here. A Porex after coming in the door there. Yeah, I'm a bit suspicious. Okay.
We have to take it. Okay, here goes. Yeah. Right, let's all be friends. Another audio one for you, Gail. Have a listen to this. Okay, that's the voice of Richard Fairbrass, who was born on this day in 1953. Can you name the band he was the lead singer with?
Right Says Fred.
It's the correct answer. We need the answers as quick as you can, Eimear. Thank you very much.
No problem, yeah.
Right, here we go. It's an audio one. And your footsteps will always fall here along England's greenest hills. Your candles burned out long before. Your legend ever. Elton John there with Candle in the Wind, released on this day in 1997. Who was it released in tribute to?
Princess Diana.
Is the correct answer. And good and fast there. Right. Gail, on this day in 1943, artist Robert Balla was born. He designed the last series of Irish banknotes before the introduction of the euro. But which Irish writer did he feature on the £10 note? James Joyce, Samuel Beckett or Oscar Wilde?
James Joyce.
Is the correct answer. Said with confidence. Eimear, questioned your final question. If you get this right, we're into a tiebreak situation. This day 50 years ago, 22nd of September 1970, the arms trial began in Dublin. It ended with the acquittal of which man who would go on to become Taoiseach for the first time in 1979?
Oh, 1979, oh God. Charles Haughey?
Is the correct answer. Right, we're in a tiebreak situation. Eimear and Gail. So it's a guess. This is one of the guessing ones, and the person who's closest gets the prize. Okay? So, have a listen to... Have I got it there anywhere? No. It's Chesney Hawkes, the one and only, was number one on this day. No, it wasn't. Chesney Hawkes was born on this day, and his only hit was the one and only. What I want to know, according to Spotify, how long is the one and only in minutes and seconds. So, Gail, I need your guess first.
3 minutes, 52 seconds.
3 minutes, 52, you say?
Yeah.
Right. And Eimear, what's your guess?
I go 3 minutes, 55.
You say 3 minutes, 55. The correct answer is 3 minutes and 43 seconds. So, Gail, it means you're the closest. Okay.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Eimear.
Well done, Gail.
Tough luck.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Eimear.
We're going to send you out a Radar Show mug. Great talking to you.
Lovely. Okay.
Thank you. Bye. Gail, well done. You're off to the Galmont Hotel and Spa in Galway.
Yes, I can hear my children roaring inside with excitement.
Well done. Don't forget to send us a postcard. And,
of course we will.
Zig will be very excited because you're staying in a superior room.
I'm off for that. Thanks very much. And thank you for letting me
For letting you on. Okay.
Thanks,
Gail Hambidge. Good luck. See you. Bye.
Thank
bye,
you,
bye. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Paul has been on. Paul Hennessy. How are you doing, Paul? He says he's screaming in the car because I guessed the song time correctly. that's great. You're so excited by that. Okay, we're going to be talking to Paul Noonan, lead singer with Bell X1 after this. Bell X1, Rocky took a lover on RTE Radio 1. And big news and good news for music lovers, because there is a festival of sorts happening the first weekend in October. And Paul Noonan from Bell X1 is on to tell us about it. How are you doing, Paul?
I'm very well, Ray. How are you?
You're coming in loudly and clearly. That's a great yoke, whatever you have there.
It is. It is.
Is it a festival? What is it?
It is a festival. It is a festival in County Meath, in the heart of the Boyne Valley, in Dunderry, on the grounds of Dunderry House.
Right.
So it's myself and C-Matt and Junior Brother playing music, but there'll also be spoken word and traditional music and little nooks and crannies around the gardens. There's 25 acres of beautiful grounds there. So it'll be, you know, a sort of coming out blinking into the light. It's the first time I'll be playing in a while, so I think everyone is gagging for such a
word. You know? Everyone is gagging for it. How many people?
100 people.
Right.
So small.
I know. Little steps, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like how many like Electric Picnic and like they're like 30,000.
Yeah,
and now you've 100
and this
people.
Is a 25-acre site, so right. We'll be spread out.
I think you're okay with the old 2-meter thing, are you?
yeah. So it's the 2nd and 3rd of October. So there are two nights. So in each night with 100 people.
Right. And do they stay up there or do they travel there or what? It's the story.
No, there's no camping. There's people travel to the site, and the site is open from 4 o'clock, so people can explore the gardens and sort of. I think one of the apart from music, one of the things we've turned to in this time is nature, and the idea of sort of hanging out for a few hours, eating some nice food, and then to see the gig. The gig is in a tent. It's covered, but with socially distanced seating.
Yeah. Officially, people from Dublin won't be able to go, will they? With the restrictions. No, I don't think so.
October 2nd and 3rd.
I don't think so. It's 3 weeks.
No.
It's three weeks. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. Well, I'd say anyway, you'll be oversubscribed with just 100 people. SOFFT, Soft Nights, it's called. And if people want to find out more, it's soft with two Fs. productions.com/ tickets, and you'll be there and see Matt and Junior Brother. You've been busy enough during lockdown.
I have, yeah. I think the first few weeks, as we all felt, was a bit of a what the hell is this, and I think I sort of retreated into, I found it very hard to create and to make anything new in that time. I think I kind of retreated into familiar songs and songs of comfort for myself. So I was learning songs on the piano and posting them. I think at that time as well, songs took on gravity and they took on sort of meaning beyond it that they would in peacetime. You know, songs like Together in Electric Dreams had that sort
classic.
Of real weight to it. You know?
Did a lovely version of that. You're a great,
thank you.
You're a great interpreter of songs. And I see Bellex One put out Boys of Summer.
Yes.
Which is a great version of that as well.
Because RTE used it for a promo for the Sunday game for the summer that wasn't, I suppose. And they had amazing footage of great GAA moments past. And it was really emotional. It was a very moving thing to sort of match that music with all that footage.
Yeah. And you also discovered children's songs.
I did.
Green Eggs and Ham was popular in our house, actually, as it happens during the summer as well.
Oh,
can you give us a couple of bars of that just to entertain our listeners?
We made it into I was home with the kids, and music has always been part of their lives. So we started a Facebook stream of a Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock,
right.
Just when parents are reaching the end of their tethers. And because a part of it for me was I'm just finished a master's in music therapy in the University of Limerick. And when lockdown happened, I was on a placement in a school here in the inner city, working with very young children in the inner city. So when schools were shut, we went home on the Thursday and I haven't seen the kids since. But I tried to continue it, I suppose, online and made sure the school knew that we were doing this online gig, I suppose it was, for kids of a Friday afternoon. So it felt like it was some way of staying in touch with the kids.
There's another Paul who says, can you thank Paul Noonan for all the Friday afternoon kazoo gigs during the lockdown? It was a wonderful entertaining distraction from what was and still is going on. So you sang a few Bellex One songs, but you also sang children's songs, and you did sing Green Eggs and Ham from Dr. Seuss.
We took a few books, classic books like Green Eggs and Ham and Where the Wild Things Are, and we made songs. We made them into songs. And I actually did having done those Friday afternoon shows, the Dublin Fringe Festival got in touch and said, would I put together a show in the flesh. So the last weekend I actually did two shows here in Dublin to, again, socially distanced audiences of children, and we did those songs there.
And the music therapy, Paul, was that with a view to having something in your back pocket? because the music industry is so precarious, or was there some other reason?
It was just a sort of maybe extending myself a bit beyond my comfort zone, learning new things, learning to use music differently. But, you know, writing music and performing can be a bit narcissistic.
Right.
You can get a bit mad about yourself. Right. And I thought, like, music therapy is using music in clinical settings to help people, put simply. So I thought, I read a book by Oliver Sacks, a neurologist, who talked really interestingly about music and the brain and how that works. And I thought I wanted to learn more about that.
So that was the impetus then. You after reading that book, you went and studied.
I did, yeah.
Right.
And it was amazing, right? I had some great placement. I worked with people in the hospice in Harold's Cross, people at the end of their lives who wanted to speak to that and to write songs about their lives. And I helped people do that. And I was working, I had a placement with adults with intellectual disabilities, again, helping them to communicate and I suppose just play music and express themselves. And so it's an amazing thing.
And what will happen with it now when we get back to some sort of normality? So will you go back to the play school where you were?
I look for work.
As a music therapist,
I'll put myself out there as a music. I would love to practice like part time. You know, to me, it's an as opposed to an instead of. Like, I'll always make music with a band and with myself and with whatever other projects come along. And I think, you know, it's another way of using music.
Yeah. And what about all your colleagues and friends and co-workers in the music industry? It's a very rough time.
It is. It is, yeah, on lots of levels. I mean, obviously, incomes have been decimated, but also our ability to connect and share our music and feel that buzz of a gig. And it's a bleak time, I suppose. And you know, the implication initially was, Jesus, lads, go ahead and do something else. It's gone.
Yeah.
It was insulting and wrong, and I know that they rolled back on that idea, but I mean, it'll come back. Whether we'll be thousands of people crammed in small spaces again, I'm not sure. But
I think that will come back eventually.
Yeah.
It's not a forever.
It's hard to imagine.
It's not a forever. But it will. You know, we have to hope that it will come back to that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Because we realise now how much we miss that sort of communal thing, and you up there on the stage, and all of us singing the words to your songs, and, you know, all that. It's just so simply lovely, emotional, and we miss that.
It is.
Yeah.
And there's no substitute for it either, because with recorded music, I think, has changed so much over the last couple of decades, I suppose, with advances in technology and with streaming and with the fact that you can get all music ever recorded on your phone.
And the other thing
is, there's no substitute for live music.
No substitute whatsoever. Soft Nights, softproductions.com, the first weekend in October up in Dundurry Park. And Paul will be there, and C-Matt and Junior Brother and other things and food. Paul, mind yourself. Thanks so much for taking our call today.
Thanks, Ray.
Thank you. Right, now. That's it from us. Philip Hector Hayes is on the way. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.